Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
All the way back to 2008. Ruination, the early years.
Welcome back to Ruination, the early years. We're digging back into the archives, the very start of Big Fatty Online.
That's right. We are jumping feet first into the third week, February 18th through the 22nd, 2008, episodes 12 to 16.
And if the first couple of weeks were about, you know, finding his footing, getting the show going, week three feels different.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
This week is huge. It's defined by, well, validation from the outside and just massive expansion plans.
Yeah, the validation point is key, isn't it? Because for weeks, he'd had this running gag, this finger to iTunes thing going on.
Constantly. Because the show was submitted, but it just wasn't showing up. You could feel the frustration building.
And then this week, bang, it happened.
It finally breaks through. BFO officially lands in the iTunes store. The long vigil, as he called it, was over.
Which is a massive technical hurdle cleared. Suddenly the show's legitimate, you know, in that big podcast directory everyone used.
It really is. It's the moment Apple, the platform he was kind of relying on, but also, you know, railing against, finally gives the okay.
The irony is just delicious. And what's the first thing he does with this newfound legitimacy?
He immediately blows the doors off the show's sort of physical limits, announces the first really big trip, the Atlantis Gay Cruise.
Takes it right out of the fat cave, doesn't he? Suddenly it's not just audio, it's planning excursions and packing lists.
Exactly. The daily format, Monday to Friday, that had just kind of settled in. Now it's immediately being tested by, like, real-world travel chaos, explicit travel chaos, even.
The core identity is there, the ruin philosophy is locked, but the scope just exploded outwards.
But even with iTunes fame and cruise plans, the underlying message stays exactly the same.
Yep, as he always hammered home, it's not just ruined, it's me, Big Fatty Online. That's the constant. Hashtag tag tag Ionists, community connections and customer service.
And that ruined foundation, it's totally built on the listeners, on that feedback loop. He spends a lot of time this week going through voice letters.
It really does feel like a listener report card, doesn't it? Like, okay, how did last week land? What did you guys think?
Customer service, but, you know, filtered through mockery. It's essential BFO.
And the big thing they were reacting to was that story about Miss Cox, his first grade teacher. That was quite a moment last week.
Definitely a moment of unusual vulnerability from, not the usual snark.
And you could tell it landed. The feedback showed that.
Oh, yeah. Ricky from the Foul Monkeys called in. Michael and Stout got two.
Yeah.
Both said the story really got to them, like choked them up.
Which is interesting, right? Even with all the outrageous stuff, those moments of real feeling, they connect deeply.
Absolutely. It shows the listeners weren't just there for the shock value. They were invested in the person behind the mic, too.
But not all the feedback was misty-eyed, was it? Tom, Ramble Redhead, had something else to say.
Right. Tom from the RNL Network. He praised the teacher's story, sure, but then immediately, like, pivots to teasing him.
About the money article.
Exactly. Tom reminded everyone how Big Fatty had made fun of him for reading an article on his show. And now, here's Big Fatty talking on some money article.
So Tom declares, what was it? You're not as ruined as you thought.
Perfect. It's that playful antagonism, you know? They're not just listeners, they're sparring partners.
We also heard from Chef Mark calling from Orlando Airport.
Yep. Post Chick-fil-A Nuggets mission accomplished. And apparently he spotted a sexy Latino boy working there. That was his good gosh and gamey moment for the week.
But the best part about Chef Mark isn't even always the message itself.
It's the pocket dials.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the pocket dials. Big Fatty reveals Mark has accidentally called him four times.
Leaving these 5-minute voicemails of just airport noise. Chick-fil-A chatter.
Exactly. It's like unintentional surveillance. It's just pure accidental comedy gold.
Then there's David, the blue jeans guy. Still loving the show, but his iPod keeps dying. That seems to be a running theme for David.
Poor David. And Big Fatty, in his infinite wisdom, diagnoses David's sound quality issues, his static, as his gosh.
Okay, we need to unpack gosh for anyone new. It's not just bad luck in BFO world.
No, no. Gosh, is Big Fatty's term for, like, a technical screw-up that has cosmic or moral or even physical origins? Like, you caused the tech fail through some personal failing.
And for David's poor phone line.
Big Fatty called it.
Testicle difficulty or telephonic interrupt-i.
Which is just poetry. Pure, unadulterated BFO poetry for bad cell reception.
Magnificent. Then Jeremiah called in, had a little dig about the recent divorce.
Yeah, at least he'll let you have a computer. Ouch.
Yeah.
But funny, he also suggested a trip down to Savannah.
Right, but the moment Jeremiah mentioned Lent, that was the trigger.
Oh, yeah. Immediate hard pivot. No time for religious observance.
Nope. Big Fatty just shut that down and instantly jumped to a discussion of, well...
But Lent. And yeah. Belly button Lent.
Classic deflection. Take anything vaguely serious or moral and just drag it down to the most basic, gross bodily level. Reasserts the show's tone instantly.
And Anthony called in, too, right? Said he was sick.
Yeah, under the weather. But he wasn't asking for soup recipes. He specifically wanted sound effects played over his message. And more popper tips. Which was a direct callback to that very specific segment from the week before.
It shows how fast the audience got it. They weren't just listening. They were actively asking for more of the specific brand of inappropriate stuff only BFO would touch. They were co-creating the chaos.
Mm.
#tag listener map growth and visual updates.
And that community engagement was really visible on the listener map this week, too. It kept growing.
Oh, yeah. The pins kept coming.
Yeah.
And Big Fatty's descriptions for the new people.
Yeah.
That's half the fun.
Who was new this week? Fairy Princess Holly in Minneapolis.
Okay.
Then Frank Stargate in Atlanta. Big Fatty's description. Crouched down, mostly naked on a railroad track.
Okay.
And then, just for good measure, adds, delicious.
Right. Just paints a whole picture, doesn't it? Who else?
Granville from Kansas City, Missouri. Sharon Fluitz.
Who he immediately dubbed Sharing Fluitz.
Yep. The safe sex church leader. And Nicole from Dallas, who apparently looked like a cartoon character.
These aren't just pins. They're instant nicknames, instant character sketches. It's a whole gallery of the weird and wonderful. And it's interactive.
Yeah.
Big Fatty's the curator slapping these wild labels on everyone.
And the existing kins got some love too. Guru Nudie.
In Tampa. Posted a new photo in a ball pit claiming he put the nasty back in Namaste.
Of course he did. And Aunt Vera Charles.
She made it into the fat favorites category on the map.
Yeah.
And Michael Perry up in Squamish, BC.
Showed off his stomach in a new picture.
It's all about participation. Showing up, putting yourself out there, maybe embarrassing yourself a little. That's the BFO community spirit.
And sometimes participation isn't optional. He called out someone specifically, didn't he?
He did. Stevie Ray. Hmm. Apparently, Stevie Ray was a listener of Archer's show, and his voice popped up on an audio clip Archer played.
So Big Fatty basically issued a demand.
Pretty much an order. Get your fat ass onto my listener map, or you get in the finger. Hilarious.
Okay.
The pressure to join is immense and personal. #tag the spam folder confessional.
So you have the curated chaos of the listener map on one hand.
And then you have the raw, unfiltered chaos of the internet itself, represented by the spam folder confessional.
Right. He actually read out subject lines from his spam folder, a snapshot of like peak 2008 internet sleaze.
He had 85 unread messages. And the subjects,
mm-hmm.
Oh boy, it's a time capsule.
Let's hear them. What was in there?
Okay, so it was the usual suspects. Viagra, promises of huge manhood, anxieties about small cocks, celebrity bait like Scarlett Johansson.
Standard stuff for the era, sadly.
But then you get the weirder ones. Just the word fingers.
Fingers, just fingers.
Yep, and the absolute masterpiece, broad erectile organ lever.
Broad erectile organ lever. What does that even mean? It sounds like bad machine translation.
Who knows? But reading it out loud, giving it airtime, that's the BFO move.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else hits delete, he turns it into content.
It's acknowledging the digital sludge everyone was wading through back then. He's not pretending it doesn't exist. He's like examining it under a microscope. Found poetry from the gutter, #tag2. Memory lane music and cultural nostalgia.
Okay, so shifting gears from digital trash to maybe some cultural treasures. The Memory Lane music segment this week was pretty eclectic.
Yeah, he really digs deep for these. It's not just playing a song. It's a whole backstory.
Monday, episode 12, kicked off with the theme from Here Come the Brides. Remember that show? 1968 to 70.
Vaguely, he pointed out it was a Western, but like with almost no guns.
Right. The whole premise, he explained, was this logging company in Seattle importing 100 women because the lumberjacks were going to quit.
Mm.
Lack of companionship, you know.
A very specific historical problem.
And he connects it to pop culture.
Yeah.
He points out that Bobby Sherman got super famous because of that show. It's that level of detail.
Tuesday, episode 13 was the train wreck episode, right? Amidst all the iTunes drama.
Yeah, his TiVo was empty. He was frustrated. So he just throws in the theme from Super Chicken.
Just because he likes it?
Pretty much. Just a random cartoon theme song break. A little moment of sonic absurdity before diving back in.
Wednesday, episode 14 brought us Hazel. The sitcom about the maid, Shirley Booth.
a definite favorite of his. But the reason he played it connects directly back to the podcasting world at the time. This is deep network lore.
Right, because Hazel called her boss Mr. B.
Exactly. And in the early days of the QCast Connection podcast, the host there was known as Mr. B. Before, you know, Scotty gave him the name Superb.
So playing the Hazel theme is like a little inside joke, a nod to the shared history of the RNL network.
Precisely. It weaves the pop culture into their own little podcasting universe.
Thursday, episode 15, Soap. Okay, that was a big one.
Huge. Soap, 1977-81, was super controversial back in the day. That's satirical, primetime soap opera format.
And the key thing, especially for the BFO audience, was the character Jody Dallas.
Played by Billy Crystal. One of the very first openly gay characters on American television.
Mm-hmm.
And not just hinted at his sexuality, was central to the plot. Groundbreaking stuff.
And Big Fatty, of course, had all the trivia.
Oh, yeah. Connected the announcer Rod Roddy to his later gig on The Price is Right, the big fat announcer with the crazy jackets.
He mentioned the creator, Susan Harris, also did The Golden Girls, and that soap spun off Benson.
And the personal anecdote about having soap parties in college where latecomers had to actually eat soap.
Please tell me that wasn't real.
Who knows with Big Fatty? But it adds that layer of personal connection to the pop culture artifact. It's a masterclass in contextualizing a theme song. #tag the custom theme song. A listener's gift.
And the week ended, musically speaking, with something very special on Friday.
Yeah, a gift from British John, the co-host of QCast, a major figure in that RNL podcasting network.
He sent in a custom song.
Yep, an acoustic ditty specifically about Big Fatty. Reference the old Little Fatty Cast days.
That's quite something, a listener writing and recording a theme song.
Totally. A real gesture.
Yeah.
But British John knew his audience. The song included the line.
Big Fatty's a big W.
Naturally. Gotta keep it BFO.
And Big Fatty's reaction, was he touched? Insulted?
Both. He did this performance of, like, over-the-top gratitude, but immediately undercut it with classic Big Fatty snark.
What did he say?
Compared the song to a kid's craft project. A popsicle stick jewelry box with a spray-painted gold macaroni on it.
Ouch. Subtle.
And then suggested British John would be a big hit at the Vacation Bible School talent show.
Okay, yeah, that's the dynamic right there. Affection delivered via insult. It's how that community worked. The highest praise is often a really good burn. #tagconversationhearts.
And woven through all this, all week long, was this little recurring bit.
The conversation hearts. He bought a bag after Valentine's Day.
And he was just eating them on mic, reading out the messages randomly.
Random messages.
Stuff like, in a fog, I hope I-L-U get real. Yes, dear.
Just these little fragments of text.
It's such a weird, specific detail. But it works, doesn't it? It's like this little audio texture running underneath the main content, crunching candy while discussing gay P or 70s sitcom.
Exactly. It's an anchor. A small, consistent, slightly absurd ritual. Very BFO. #3, reality TV roundup and gay gossip. Okay, let's dive into the reality TV commentary, because this week it felt like it shifted up a gear. It wasn't just recapping anymore.
No, it really became about sourcing and sharing gossip. Like behind the scenes, sometimes explicit stuff, he's injecting himself right into the narrative.
Starting with Big Brother 9, the focus was on James, the guy with the pink mohawk.
And Big Fatty went way beyond what CBS was showing. He stated it as fact that James had done gay pee.
How do you back that up?
Said the tattoos matched videos people had found online. And then because it's BFO, he added commentary on the visuals.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Noted James had a very large penis and pretty big balls based on this alleged evidence.
Wow. Okay, that's definitely taking the commentary outside the usual fan forms. That's bringing in external explicit rumors as a fact.
Exactly. And then there was the other Big Brother drama contestant, Adam, being revealed as uncut.
Which apparently shocked one of the female house guests.
And Big Fatty uses that moment, right, poses the question to the audience. Is it that unusual that she's never seen an uncut penis?
He turns a reality TV moment into a frank discussion about sexual experience and norms. It's kind of his signature move.
Totally. Okay. Shifting to American Idol. He posted pictures of the guys on the website.
And he was surprised by the age range, right? Some were up to 29.
Yeah, he found that kind of old for Idol. But his commentary wasn't really about their singing potential.
No, it was more about vibes,
yeah,
aesthetics.
Pretty much. He singled out the queens, especially Danny, who was apparently snapping, contrasted them with the younger guys like David Archuleta, who he called an innocent, sweet little thing.
And the best visual comparison.
Pointing out that contestant Colton looks like Fing Ellen DeGeneres.
Right. It's all about the look, the persona, the snap judgments. Performance is secondary to the visual drama.
He did make one correction, though, about the idol songs on iTunes.
Ah, yes, the logistics. He'd said they were free.
Yeah, but corrected himself.
Mm-hmm.
They were 99 cents each, or $1.99 for the whole batch.
Yeah.
Gonna get the pricing right, even amidst the gossip. Admirable, in a way. Hashtag, tag, tag, Dancing with the Stars, season 6 cast.
And then Dancing with the Stars announced its new cast. Another chance for snap judgments.
Oh, yeah. He ran down the list. Priscilla Presley, okay. Christy Yamaguchi, the skater, fine.
But then he got to the more interesting choices.
Marley Matlin. He immediately questioned the logistics. How does a deaf person compete in dancing? Fair question, maybe, but blunt.
And Penn Jillette.
The big fat half of Penn and Teller. That was his identifier.
But the real focus was, predictably, on the guys.
Yep. Christian De La Fuente and Jason Taylor. Immediately classified as delicious.
And Marissa Jarrett-Wieneker.
Labeled kind of fat.
Oof. Just instant, unfiltered judgment based entirely on looks and body type. That's the BFO lens on reality TV. No filter. Hashtag tag other media and podcast poop.
He also spent some time boosting other podcasts in the network, but with a classic BFO twist.
Right. He plugged Archer's new show, encouraged people to listen.
But then added that little bit of intrigue. Said Archer maybe said some things about the podcasting world that maybe he shouldn't have said.
Creates instant drama. Makes you want to listen to find out what the secret dirt is. Brilliant promotion, really. Suggests insider knowledge.
And he plugged Annie Vera Charles again. Vera speaks for real. Called her his alter ego on the left coast.
Why? Because they shared opinions.
Shared opinions, yeah, like liking guys with long hair. And shared life experiences like picking up street trash.
Okay, so it's about finding those points of connection, reinforcing that specific BFO worldview across the network.
All right, this is the big win for the week, the cruise announcement. This is where Big Fatty's personal life totally merges with the show's content. Retirement plans, travel, it's all on the table now.
First up, the countdown. He hit a milestone, didn't he?
Yep. Announced he was officially 200 days away from being able to retire. September 10th was the target date. Sets up that long-term goal. Hashtag, tag, tag, trip details, ruining your city.
But the immediate focus was the trip, the Atlantis Gay Cruise.
March 2nd to 9th on the Celebrity Millennium. Chartered like 1,900 people. It's going with Larry Clive from the old Little Fatty cast days.
And they weren't exactly roughing it. Concierge class.
Oh, yeah. He listed the perks. Champagne when you arrive, fresh flowers, daily canapes, fancy robes, express luggage, top tier stuff. Remember these details. They matter later.
Establishes the baseline of luxury. But the ruination has to start before they even board, right?
Of course. They're flying into Fort Lauderdale early February 29th and staying at, wait for it, the Inn Leather.
The Inn Leather.
Okay, right. Which he felt the need to clarify, has a hammock in every room, by which he meant a sling.
Right, good clarification. So the pre-cruise stay sounds like it could be its own show.
He basically promised that, said he'd record from there, might have a horror picture or two or a horror story or two for later. The pre-trip is content generation.
And he tapped the listeners for intel, didn't he? Fort Lauderdale gay bars.
Yep, crowdsourcing the itinerary. Ask for suggestions and name the contenders. Dude's Bar, Hottest Men Dancing, George's Alibi, Bill's Filling Station, Masculine Men on Friday Afternoons, Cubby Hole, and the Leather Bar, the Ramrod. He's planning a targeted attack on the local scene. Hashtag, hashtag, onboard highlights and white party controversy.
So once they're actually on the ship, what's the plan?
He ran through the official Atlantis schedule. Lots of parties. Sunset cocktail party, dog tag tea dance, Mardi Gras party,
yep.
Disco tea dance. He specified 70s music for that one. The Tribu party.
Any entertainment highlights?
A concert by Frenchie Davis from American Idol season 2. Comedy showcases. A hypnotist. And he mentioned past celeb guests to set the scene. Cybill Shepherd, Chaka Khan, Joan Rivers had been on previous cruises.
Sounds like a pretty packed high-energy week, but Big Fatty found a way to inject some BFO-style rebellion, didn't he?
Oh, immediately. The white party. A staple of these cruises. Everyone wears white.
And Big Fatty's plan.
He announced very deliberately that he would be wearing his black leather outfit to the white party on Friday night.
Of course he would. Why conform when you can conspicuously dissent?
Exactly. He predicted he'd be standing off to the side and getting lots of looks, like, what the F wrong with him? He's manufacturing his own ruined moment within the party structure.
Was there any performer he was actually looking forward to?
Yes. Miss Richfield, 1981. He called her that crazy woman drag queen thing from Minnesota. She was hosting bingo. He seemed genuinely excited about her. Shows his specific taste in queer comedy. #tag excursions. The true ruination.
Okay, the ship sounds luxurious. The parties sound intense. But the real potential for peak BFO content seems to lie in the excursions.
This is where the magic or maybe the disaster happens. This is the setup for the post-cruise stories.
First stop, Key West. What's the plan there?
Relatively tame, morning GPS walking tour, okay? Then a 4 p.m. Key West pub tour.
Pub tour? How many pubs?
4 pubs, drinks included. His prediction was blunt. I should be in a very short amount of time.
Seems like a reasonable expectation. Okay, yeah. Next port.
Grand Cayman. Nothing planned there. He did mention that the first Atlantis cruise he took, like a decade earlier, got turned away from Grand Cayman by protesters. A little bit of history.
Cozumel, Mexico.
Pure relaxation. Passion Island escape. Quiet Island, hammocks, open bars, buffets. Just chill time.
All right, this all sounds pretty manageable, even pleasant. Where does the ruination come in?
Belize City. This is it. This is the moment of peak BFO decision making.
What did he sign up for?
Raiders of the Lost Mayan Cave.
Raiders of the... Oh, okay. Sounds adventurous.
Adventurous doesn't cover it. He admitted, on air, he had no idea why he signed up for this.
What does it involve?
Okay, get this. Crawling through caves, sometimes on your belly, in the dark, with just a headlamp.
Huh.
Crossing swinging bridges, rappelling down things, ziplining.
Wait. This is the same guy who booked concierge class with the canapes and the fluffy robes.
The very same. The contrast is staggering, isn't it? Ultimate pampered luxury on the ship, and then voluntarily signing up for what sounds like a Special Forces endurance test.
It makes absolutely no sense.
Logically, no. But in terms of BFO content, it's perfect. He's setting up this incredible story of potential misery and disaster. He knows it's absurd, he knows it might break him, but he also knows it will make for fantastic radio after the fact, assuming he survives.
It's the ultimate commitment to the ruined bit. Paying for luxury, then choosing hardship for the story.
Exactly. And he wrapped up the cruise planning by warning everyone, no show on Monday, March 10th, because he'd be getting back late, presumably exhausted and possibly injured from the Mayan cave adventure, managing expectations for the fallout. #VBFO business and philosophy.
So amidst all this personal planning and chaos, there was still the underlying business of the show itself. And the big news finally broke.
Mid-show, Friday, February 22nd, he just cuts in with the announcement.
Big Fatty is now listed in the iTunes store. Just like that.
The long wait was over. Apple had finally let him in. Huge moment.
How does that change things, though, suddenly being official?
Well, that's the interesting question, right? So much of the show's identity was built on being this outsider, this rogue podcast Apple wouldn't touch. Now he's in. Does that change the ruined vibe?
He seemed to address that immediately by asking the listeners about the show itself.
Yeah, he used the moment, the increased visibility maybe, to poll the audience. Is daily too much? Should it be 4, 5, or 6 days a week?
Bringing the community right into the structural planning, making them stakeholders.
Keeps them invested. And he kept plugging the website, too. New idle pics. The travel plans were up there under Ruining Your City. Reminded people, no WWW needed.
Even with iTunes, the website is still the mothership, where the uncensored stuff lives.
Absolutely. And he rounded off the week with a perfect little BFO observation connecting the cosmic to the mundane.
The full moon?
Right. Notes it's a full moon, traditionally a time when people get crazy, and then immediately connects it to his neighbor.
The one who seemed to be leaving her husband.
Yep. She asked him to help move a washing machine and pack furniture. He said no.
So the full moon madness manifests as needing help moving appliances.
Exactly. Takes this big, vague superstition and grounds it instantly in the specific, slightly awkward reality of his own backyard. That's the observational genius of BFO, #RedUTRO.
So looking back at this week, February 18th to 22nd, 2008, it really feels like a pivot point in the early years of Ruination.
Absolutely. The show gets the iTunes validation it craved, but instead of polishing things up, it leans harder into the chaos. More explicit gossip, deeply personal travel plans, the works.
It's that consistency paradox you mentioned. The content gets wilder, more unconstrained, but the structure, the daily format, the listener feedback, the countdowns, it holds steady. That framework allows the chaos to flourish.
It really does. The structure is the safety net that lets him walk the high wire without, well, totally falling off.
And the thing that really sticks with me from this week is that Belize excursion plan. The contrast is just stark.
Right. Concierge class luxury. Champagne, canapes, express luggage, total comfort.
and then choosing to sign up for the Raiders of the Lost Mayan Cave. Crawling through mud, rappelling down cliffs. Why?
It's deliberately seeking discomfort, isn't it? Paying a premium for ease, and then paying again, essentially, for hardship. It's fascinatingly counterintuitive.
Which brings us to that final thought, maybe, for you listening.
Yeah. Is that deliberate seeking of challenge, that voluntary ruination, whether it's crawling through a cave or maybe just committing to something difficult like a daily podcast, is that necessary somehow? Does it make the comfortable parts of life, the concierge class moments, feel more earned, more valuable?
Where in your own life are you embracing the difficult thing, the potential ruination, because maybe that's where the real story is? Or are you happy just enjoying the canapes?
A question at the very heart of Big Fatty Online, I think.
Definitely something to chew on. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into ruination, the early years. We'll be back next time, digging through more of the BFO archives.
Well, we hope you enjoyed today's trip down memory lane on Ruination, the early years. Join us again next weekend. We'll see you then.